Welcome to episode 133 of Your Kids Next Read podcast, in which we talk about books and reading for kids of all ages. I'm Alison Tate, author of middle grade adventure series, The Mapmaker Chronicles, The Outerband Cipher, The Maven and Reeve Mystery Series, and my new middle grade novel, The First Summer of Callie McGee. I'm here for the very last official podcast recording of the year with my co-host, I'm just going to put it out there, completely overwhelmed, Megan Daly, teacher librarian at Children's Books Daily, author of Raising Readers, editor of Teacher Teacher, and with a brand new picture book coming early next year, which she keeps forgetting to tell us all about. So I'm hoping she might throw that in somewhere today. Megan and I, along with our good friend, author Alison Rushby, are founders of the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. Search for Your Kids Next Read there to join us. So, Megan Daly, what is occurring in the Santa's cabin, the Santa's workshop of Megan this week?
Look, there is a bit of overwhelm because I'm trying to keep the house clean for open houses. I have my house on the market and I'm freaking out about the fact that we don't really have a plan for moving into the new house and realizing that it's been so long because we thought we would be in the new house last Christmas that we haven't thought about things like we might need a washing machine. Dishwasher. So, you know, I just am suddenly really realizing all of the things, you know, NBN connections, all of these sorts of things. So I am feeling a little overwhelmed. Well, is Christmas happening in my house? No, not really, because of the open houses. So I have said Christmas cannot exist until after we have sold the house.
Right.
Is that okay?
So you'll be having Christmas in March or something, will you?
Yeah, something like that. I'm hoping we might forget about it.
Well, I've got a bit of a surprise for you and, well, not really for you, but for everyone else, I've got a bit of a surprise because Alison Rushby, what is occurring in your queendom this week?
Hello. Hello, hello, hello.
How exciting to have you with us.
We're having an office Christmas party.
How tragic is our lives that the only way that we can have an office Christmas party is via Zoom. But anyway, let's talk about you. Al, what's going on?
Well, I am busy not buying presents. You know, every year I just want to be one of those like super smug people who's like, oh, I got all my shopping done in the Black Friday sales and I'm all sorted. Every year I want to be that person and every year it gets up to about, 22nd of December and then I go, yeah. So I'm just currently not buying presents.
Okay. I can relate to that. I'm also not buying presents, but I think it's partly for me. It's not even like the last minute stuff aspect of it. I'm really struggling to find the Christmas spirit this year. Hence, we need to have an office Christmas party. I went round to my mum and dad's yesterday and I had been to Aldi because I had to go and buy, you know, whatever random thing I was buying in Aldi.
Chocolate.
And I bought them chocolate. I'd bought them some gin flavored creams and two little Christmas puddings. And I just turned up with them. And I'm like, I'm giving you these to create Christmas cheer because I'm struggling to find something. They just looked at me like, that's a massive effort, Al. Not like I haven't even got a Christmas tree up yet. Like I'm not there.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I have been doing is creating lists. And
you have.
I know exactly how Santa feels because it has been epic. I have created lists of the Your Kids Next Read community's favorite reads of 2023. We have picture books. We have junior fiction. We have early chapter books. We have middle grade. We have YA. We have this amazing roundup. So I'm going to put all the links in the show notes at yourkidsnextread.com.au. And you should definitely go and have a look at those if you are like Alison Rushby and like me and probably like Megan, who doesn't sound like she's done a single thing about Christmas shopping. And you are looking for those gifts. You know, if you're looking for the perfect read for your young reader, I'm pretty sure that you're going to find it in those lists. Plus, we have a little bit of a discussion for you a little bit further down in the podcast. In the meantime, though, if you would like to give us a Christmas gift, because clearly we're not buying them for anyone else, but that doesn't mean we don't want them because that's, you know, pretty much how Christmas works. What we would actually love is a review. If you have enjoyed the podcast this year, if we have helped you in some way, if we have found a book for you, if you have loved the quality waffle, which let's face it, like, honestly,
I could go a waffle now.
I could go a waffle too with some Belgian chocolate sauce on it.
Oh, so good.
Anywho, waffle aside, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if that's where you listen to your podcasts, because we would really, really, really like to see that under the tree.
It's not easy to celebrate Christmas when wishes are going wrong and a gingerbread person is biting your guests. From award-winning author Alison Rushby, illustrator Karen Blair, and UQP comes the fifth installment in the Wish Sisters series, The Christmas Wish, the perfect stocking stuffer for your 6-plus reader this Christmas.
Right, speaking of under the tree, which, you know, let's face it, is where some people end up at the office Christmas party, it's time for us to have our office Christmas party. Now, before we get official proceedings underway, because clearly there's going to be official proceedings, there's always some, isn't there? There's always someone who gets up and gives a speech that's too long. It's going to be me, apparently. what party drink did you BYO to the office Christmas party today? Megan Daly.
Okay, so I have gone with the Bundaberg Spiced Ginger Beer. Now, I found out about this Christmas drink, which is about as Christmas as I'm getting this year, thanks to my terribly festive sister-in-law who has not one but two Christmas trees in her house and loves Christmas. Oh. She put me onto this Bundaberg Spiced Ginger Beer some years ago. You can purchase it in a few places. I purchase it in the German store with the Isle of Unexpected Purchases, as I call it.
How did I not find that when I was in there looking for my gin flavored creams? I wonder.
It's really quite lovely. It's got flavors of cinnamon and cloves and, of course, ginger because it's ginger beer. It came out, because I Googled it, it came out in 2014 as a limited release from the Bundaberg Ginger Beer Factory, but it's become a firm favourite at this festive time of year. And if you were to want to add an alcoholic punch to it, I came up with a name for it this morning. I'm calling it the Christmas Storms because I'm Brisbane-based, as is Al Rushby, and we have a lot of storms around Christmas. So I'm calling it, instead of a dark and stormy, a Christmas storm. Oh. And you could have a bit of rum, some rosemary, a slice of dehydrated orange and a cinnamon stick to swizzle it all around and top it up with some Bundaberg Spiced Ginger Beer.
Nice.
It sounds very refreshing.
It's a delicious drink.
Oh, okay. What about you, Alison Rushby? What have you got for us?
Well, I'm actually drinking water because it is like living in Hades in Brisbane at the moment. So hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. But what I'm actually investigating is chilled mulled wine. Mm. So I'm trying to work out how to make a chilled mulled wine.
Chilled mulled wine.
Yeah.
Isn't the whole point of a mull is to make it a warm?
Yeah, but Brisbane.
Brisbane.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm investigating and put it in the fridge.
Because I want to be in Switzerland drinking mulled wine. But I'm not. So I'm trying to make it chilled. Yes.
That sounds exciting. Well, I'm on a clean, crisp champagne today, and it's the real stuff. It's not what you normally get at these events where someone's walking around with a $5 bottle, having one glass only, because I have discovered that so nothing goes to my – I don't know about you guys. I don't know if it's the bubbles. I don't know if it's the sheer excitement of the fizz, but I am a one glass of champagne only girl. Yeah. And so I'm having that. It's fresh and it's not really 10:30 in the morning. And I, in my mind, I'm somewhere far, far away from my office and a Zoom. But anyway, now we have to get to the Kris Kringle because, of course, office Christmas parties, we do the Kris Kringle. We're going to do – what is your go-to Kris Kringle gift – for $25 or less, because I'm going to put a price bracket on it.
Okay, nice.
I'm going to start because my go-to is Bananagram.
You stole mine. That's usually
my
go-to.
It's the best, honestly, the little banana-shaped bag. The game is so fun. You can play it by yourself if you really, really want to. If you're like me and you're sitting in your office by yourself, I am really missing Procrastipop because I don't even have the I don't even have the opportunity or the excuse for like a little Christmas party for two. Like I used to put a little bit of tinsel on his collar and go and have a coffee. And it's tragic. But this is what you do when you're home by yourself all day, right? Yeah. So Bananagrams. I am absolutely investing in many, many little bags of Bananagrams and I'm just handing them out everywhere I go because it's such a great gift.
It's a great game.
And it's so portable. That's what I love about it. Yeah. So portable. All right, that's mine. What's yours, MD?
Okay, mine is I love native bees. My book, The Beehive, is coming out in February. There you go.
Look, she's talking.
Nice.
But I know. That was a good segue. But what I have purchased for Kris Kringle gifts for a number of years now is these fabulous native bee posters by artist Gina Cranston. Oh. They are $25. And IKEA, if you want to go slightly over budget, has these fabulous poster holders to hold them. They're really beautiful posters featuring watercolor bees, native bees, accompanied by scientific names, common names, and silhouettes indicating actual size. And the artist consulted with a number of entomologists around Australia to produce posters for each state and territory in Australia, including Dr. Tobias Smith, who is our very loved entomologist up here in Brisbane. So I love these posters. They are very, very beautiful. And they're sort of vintage looking, so I love that kind of style.
That's fantastic. I love that you are, like, you are so on brand.
I'm on brand.
With your Kris Kringle.
I know.
What about you, Ms. Rushby? What's your go-to?
Well, there's nothing better than a homemade gift, is it? And even better is one that is homemade but not homemade by me.
I'm sorry. Say, do you bake?
Look at us. We were both about to fall over.
Yeah, we were.
I know. Alison Rushby noted for her home crafting.
So I'm outsourcing the homemade. So we've got this. There's a local teenager who makes gingerbread granola.
No.
I'm just going to let that sit there for a minute because it is so good. So it's these, you can choose big jars or small jars, and there's tiny little gingerbread people in them.
No.
I know. It's great.
And so after this, if you could just send me that link, that would be great.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So you are supporting small business.
Oh, yeah.
You are encouraging enterprising teens. You are looking like a queen of goddess homemade stuff.
That's right.
And you are not having to do any of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you win.
All right. Okay. It's pretty good.
So apparently Megan Daly's bags the granola.
Because I already own Bananagram.
Which means I'm getting the native bees, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Fantastic.
The new Harry Potter Wizarding Almanac is the only official companion to the Harry Potter book series. Lavishly illustrated by 7 incredible artists, the stunning hardcover almanac is the ultimate gift for Harry Potter fans, and also the perfect introduction for new readers. The Harry Potter Wizarding Almanac. It's new and it's in bookstores now.
Okay, let us move on because we are going to talk about the reason that we're here together. There is a reason.
The reason for the season.
The reason for the season. The quality waffle is all leading to this. We've decided that, so we don't do best, right? Best books is not what we're about. Mm-mm. What we are about is the right book for the right person at the right time, et cetera. But we also recognize that reading is a subjective thing. So some of us are going to have favorites in certain areas and others are going to have different favorites in other areas. So that was the reason behind why the Your Kids Next Read lists are always favorite reads. And we've decided we'll do our own this year, which we haven't done before. We haven't done a list of, you know, my favorites, your favorites, ours favorites. And so we've decided that we're going to do that now. And I'm going to start because I know Megan Daly has a list that is about, she was supposed to, there were meant to be 10. Let's just say we're going to do
numbers.
We were going to do 10 each. It was going to be so neat and tidy and it was going to be lovely.
But of course, unstuck with
it ain't going to work that way. So I'm going to start with Alison Rushby, who is very, very good at following a brief, just saying, and has put out a list here of her top 10 books. So what have you got for us on your top 10 favourite reads of the year?
This was so much fun to look over, wasn't it? Because it's just, you know, you get to have a look at all the books all over again and remember why you really love them. I have got in the picture books category, we will start with picture books category. There's a lot of food books here. I'm just going to say. As I wrote a few of them down, I was like, well, you're a glutton, aren't you? But So I'm going to start with Pasta by Felice Arena, illustrated by Beatrice Sirocki. And I just love this, just even the cover. As soon as I saw the cover, I knew this was going to be a book for me because, I mean, who doesn't love pasta? And especially kids. Kids love pasta, right? But there's just... they're really bold illustrations, just lovely, bold illustrations.
Graphically, it's beautiful.
It really is. It's just stunning.
I gifted it to an Italian friend.
Oh, and did they love it?
They did.
Of course. They did. Of course. But there's just lots of fun words to say and there's great sounds. I'd never really considered, you know, how much fun saying all the pasta words all together would be, but It really is. It's such a great idea. It's really simple, but so great. Like all the best picture books, right? Simple idea, exactly. But just fantastic. So I love that. My next food book is Stay for Dinner.
Oh, yes. We loved this one.
Yeah. Sanja Parapukaran, illustrated by Michelle Pereira. Another food book. Yes, I like food okay. but I really liked all the social skills. And it's not really just about food. It's so much about social skills and cultural difference and how different households do different things in different ways. Mm. And, you know, including eating, which of course we all knew, but, you know, it's not something you really just ever sit down and think about, I suppose. Mm. My third picture book is You're Fabulous As You Are by Sophie Beer, which is self-explanatory, but of course it's all about you do you, and that's, you know, whether that's wearing sparkly tutus or big black boots, being messy or neat or quiet or loud, it's just a really good message for everybody, young and old, I suppose. In middle grade, of course, you know, this is, you know, where I love to read the most. This is my territory, yes. I have The Thames and Tide Club by Katja Balin. Mm. Now, I think one of you guys has Pamela Rushby's The Mud Puddlers.
I know. Well, she stole it from me.
I did. Yeah. I stole it. I got in early. This is what happens when you get in thieving. First, right?
Yeah. There's some thieving going on. So this is another mudlarking book, you know, like treasure hunting on the Thames. Because you can never have too many mudlarking books. I think it's really popular at the moment. We have seen quite a few mudlarking books over the past few years. And, you know, I love them because, of course, I want to find a magical object and go on an adventure.
And, you know, I only discovered Katja Balin this year. She's amazing.
Yes, definitely.
Well, when we interviewed her, that was actually probably my first real introduction. And I was like, okay.
I went down a rabbit hole.
Where have I been?
Yeah, I love Foxlight and I love
Yes.
Look, see, now I'm out of my numbers. See, So I love Foxlight as well and, you know, really love the Thames and Tide Club. Next up I had The Hotel Witch by Jessica Miller. So there's, you know, a fancy hotel, an apprentice witch and a mystery. This one had definite Kiki's Delivery Service vibes when I picked it up and I was not disappointed. It totally delivered. So I really enjoyed that. And then The Ghost Book by Remy Lay.
Because you like a ghost.
I love a graphic novel and I love Remy Lay. So I knew this was going to be for me as well.
Tick, tick, tick.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I was lining up. All about a boy who's stuck between the worlds of the living and the dead. So, you know, it's got everything for me right there. And
not one for me.
No. It was not scary. Come on. You can
it's
do
lovely.
It.
No, I did. It's great.
And then I moved into young adult. So definitely one of my top reads for this year was The Sinister Booksellers of Bath by Garth Nix. I really loved the first book in the series, The Left-Handed Booksellers of London. And I actually like this one even more than that.
That's unusual.
I didn't know this one existed, actually. I'll have to add that to my Christmas list.
I just think these are really great crossover books, actually. They're, you know, it doesn't matter if you're an adult or a teen. These are just, you know, anybody can read they're just really great. Lots of great adventure. This one's got maps, hot springs, Bath, dangerous magic. You know, like, it's really, like he's writing
not
them
to love?
Me. He's writing. It's like I couldn't come up with a better list and pass it over to Garth Nix. and then I've got Scar Town. So Tristan Banks' Scar Town. Now, this was hand sold to me, this book, by a teen book club who had just read it. And I hadn't read the book then, but they told me that I had to read it. It was the way they talked about it, actually, that really sold it to me. They really understood. I was really surprised with the depth of their understanding of this book. It was really interesting how I just sat there and listened to them talk about it. You know, they discussed all the themes and the characters. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, I was actually really impressed with how deep their understanding was and, you know, what they'd pulled out of the book. And so I had to go and read it after that, and I really enjoyed it. And actually they, you know, really steered my reading of it, I think.
Oh, that's like great.
I thought, wow, that's I was really impressed, and I really enjoyed the read. Then I've had The Mysteries of Thorn Manor by Margaret Rogerson. This is like a little sequel novella to Sorcery of Thorns, which I just adored. All of Margaret's books are fantastic. They are lush and gothic. And Sorcery of Thorns, so this Mystery of Thorn Manor is the sequel novella, but, you know, it carries on from Sorcery of Thorns. And it's all about magical grimoires in this fantastic library. So if you've got a teen who's into romanticy and likes a bit of romance and danger and that sort of
lush gothic world. Romanticy.
It's a thing.
It's a big thing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. They will love this. Margaret is just a fantastic writer. And some of her other series too.
I'm about to buy that for my team.
Yeah, it's good. She's got, I think her first was in An Enchantment of Ravens, and that's kind of a fae world. This one is Magical Grimoires. It's a bit different, but they're all her books are fantastic. And then my last book is What the River Knows by Isabel Ibanez. Now, this was really interesting. I enjoyed this a lot. So it's set in this 19th century Buenos Aires, sort of steeped in magic. And it's all about an heiress who takes herself off to Cairo to find out what happened to her parents who have disappeared. And this kind of romance and adventure and danger and everything you could want, really, to whisk you away. Yeah, it's a really interesting world.
Sounds amazing. So there's a few on there that I haven't read and am now on my list of things to read. So you've got like this whole secret reading life that we just don't know about because you don't have to front up every week and talk about it like we do.
So I'm busy reading.
We're an open book. Everybody knows what we're reading.
Such an open book. But I love that because there's some new ones there for us anyway. And I'm hoping for our readers as well, which is great. All right. So I'm going to go through my top 10 next because I'm going to leave Megan to do the long, you know, CEO speech after that. So I think regular listeners would probably almost be able to do this list for me because it's, you know, pretty much what I've been enthusiastic about all year. The first one is the picture book Anchored by Deborah Tidball and Ariel Liu. You might remember I read that one and was just like taken apart by it because Bookboy was heading off overseas and I felt like it was one of those books that worked equally well for, you know, young children heading off to, you know, daycare or school or whatever, as it does, you know, opposite when the children are also heading out into the world. And I thought it was beautiful. Like, it's a lovely story and the illustrations are absolutely stunning. After we spoke about it last time, I actually sent it to an author friend of mine who was away a lot because they were launching a big book and their toddler, who's about 3 or 4, was really struggling with it, like very much struggling with that sort of separation anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so I said, oh, you've got to read this book. I'm going to send you this book. And she has then since then read this book to the toddler several times. And she sent me a message to say, thank you so much. It was so helpful. Like, it was so helpful in helping them to sort of manage that dynamic. So that was great. I was like, gosh, I'll just chalk up one for children's literature right there. Now, the second one I loved randomly was Neil, The Amazing Sea Cucumber by Amelia McInerney and Lucinda Gifford. Look, honestly, the tone of it, that deadpan humor, the story in the illustrations versus the story in the text, it really, really appealed to me. It just tickled all of my, I don't know, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy kind of, you know, that the person who read that as a teenager adored Neil, The Amazing Sea Cucumber. So loved that one. The Gargoyle by Zana Freon and Ross Morgan, I also loved because it was one of those achievements as a picture book that I'm just in awe of it. I remain in awe of it. Like often with the books that we get in book mail and talk about and stuff, I am always donating them to local schools or I'm using them for giveaways or I'm, you know, whatever. But then I have a little section on my shelf of the ones that I keep. And this one is in that section. It's in that, you know, little corner of my bookshelf that I'm keeping because I just felt like it was, as I said, such an achievement. I thought it was amazing.
Now, moving into junior fiction, I have the Wish Sister series by Alison Rushby. And
oh, I hear that's good.
I've heard it's good too. I just think it's great. I love the fact that it hits that niche in that junior fiction space. I love the fact that I have been, you know, watched that series unfold right from the initial idea all the way through. I think that makes you also, you know, feel like you're part of it. And I think it's fantastic. And I am so impressed that you got five of them out in 1 year or whatever.
I know, so like, impressive.
Go you.
Me too.
Amazing.
There was fights in my library, that series.
Fantastic. And then I've got Millie Mack, The Maker by Alice Pung and Cheryl Ng. And I put it in junior fiction sort of in that sort of 8+ kind of area, 8 to 9. It's one of those ones that I have also seen it listed in middle grade. So it kind of like it, I guess I reckon the sweet spot for it is readers who are 8. And so therefore it can be top end of junior fiction or bottom end of sort of middle grade. But the story's interesting enough that I think that older readers in that middle grade space who are looking for something that's kind of like really accessible and engaging and there's stuff happening, but it's not overly lengthy. There's still, you know, illustrations, there's still, you know, that sort of thing. I think they would love it. I loved the edition, like it's at hardback. Oh, the cover beautiful. Was beautiful. And then it's got all the sort of like instructions on how to do things in the back. And it's, yeah, I just thought it was a really, really great little kind of book. I suspect there's going to be more of those. Are you getting a vibe out of that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I also think for anyone that remembers the Violet Mackerel series by Anna Branford.
Love those.
Yeah, it's very much in that kind of makery vein. And I just, when I read Millie Mack, I was like, oh, it took me back to how much I adored Violet Mackerel. Still adore Violet Mackerel. So I think Millie Mack and Violet could be friends.
Okay,
if they existed. In real life.
But they are actual people. Like, we all know that. Like when you carried someone around your head for 2 years,
yeah,
they're real.
That's right.
Trust me, they're real. Then I'm moving into middle grade. I've got Queenie in Seven Moves by Zanny Louise. I had to double check this. It did actually come out in January of 2023. I was trying to think, was it last year or was it this year? But it was actually very early this year. I think it's just a lovely book. It's not too long. It's got that warm, you know, the Zanny Louise thing. I don't even know how to describe what she does with her writing, but it's like there's this kind of warm that comes out of the book when you read
it. Like a patchwork blanket.
It's just gorgeous. And it's a very timely story. It's got, you know, themes of like, you know, having to move from house to house while you're looking for your permanent home. And and she takes a subject that's actually quite difficult and very painful and turns it into this really warm, kind of engaging reading experience. She's very, very clever. And it's, to be honest, like there's not too many Zanny Louises that I've read that I haven't immediately thought, oh, isn't that lovely? Like, you know, she's just lovely. She's just lovely. And she's such a lovely person as well, does not hurt at all. Then I have The Mud Puddlers by Pamela Rushby, which I got in early with and stopped.
I know.
Because I just think it's fabulous. And I think, you know, for historical fiction with that sort of, you know, contemporary vibe, I just think she's done such a great job with it. And I fully expect to see it on, you know, award lists and things like that going forward. And then I've put this in middle grade.
I know. I was intrigued you put this in middle grade.
Yeah, because it keeps turning up in middle grade. Okay. I actually, when we first talked about this book, which is Hamlet Is Not Okay by R.A. Spratt, I had it in YA.
YA.
When we first discussed it, when it came in the book mail, and I actually interviewed R.A. about this book, and I had it in that sort of YA space because it's sort of Hamlet-y and there's, yeah, but everyone keeps talking about it in that as middle grade. So I'm going to say lower YA. Mm-hmm. Should we do that? Should we put it at that sort of 13, 14 sort of space? I just think it's incredibly clever and I really, really enjoyed reading it. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that she was happy to have a crack at Shakespeare.
She's just got the wildest, like, most wonderful brain.
Does that? Who goes, you know what, I'm going to rewrite Shakespeare so that it suits me better? I just kind of like the chutzpah that goes with that. And I think that teens will really relate to it, and particularly anyone who's had to read Hamlet will definitely relate to what she's done. But she's actually created within this very engaging story quite a good sort of study guide and overall kind of interrogation of what Hamlet is all about and what it's not. And I think that's incredibly clever. Mm. And I ummed and ahed about this, and I know that anyone who listened to my interview with Catherine Rundle will be like, I can't believe you ummed and ahed about it, given I was gushing, like I was just like bawling over myself. Impossible Creatures by Catherine Rundle. Now, the only reason that I just tossed about putting this onto my fave reads pile was I was worried that I was so in love with the writing of this book and the writing in the book that I was like, have I missed, is this actually just not, you know, appealing to middle grade readers? Because, you know, there's a difference between being a great middle grade novel and a really incredibly beautifully written middle grade novel.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain the difference, but it's a little bit different. And so I read it again, and then I also had a bit of a, you know, peruse around. And the general gist, it turned up on the Your Kids Next Read community's favourite book, middle grade book. So young readers had nominated as their favourite. And I'm thinking, well, okay, so it's definitely, you know, hitting the buttons there. But Al Rushby, I know that you, like, while also appreciating the joy of the writing of it, did not fall in love with the book itself, did you?
No. I did enjoy it, but
not a fave.
No, it wasn't.
Fair enough. All right. So, Impossible Creatures, I've got it there because I just think it was an extraordinary achievement, beautiful writing, and some really, really interesting ideas dealt with in a really interesting way. It's a novel with a lot of big themes in it. So for that reason, I think it's not for every middle grade reader. It is also just an extraordinary book to read. So, you know, you need to weigh that one up. And then my last one is actually a verse novel, Grace Notes by Karen Comer. And it's a YA novel, and I think it's great. I loved it. It's got music, it's got graffiti, it's really accessible, it's got this great sort of like teen vibe about it, and I think she's absolutely nailed it. I absolutely loved it. And that's me.
Great list. I like it a lot. Now, for my list, you might need to speed up to 1.5.
You might want to sit down with your beverage of choice at this point.
No, it's just I'm not very good at numbers, so I ignored the 10. And also, I did, as I know you both did as well, but I did go back through all of the books that I've enjoyed this year, right back to January. And I started with about 40 on my favorite books of 2023. And I have actually narrowed it down. So come on, bear with me, but put me on 1.5 speed if you want.
There my aren't first, 40. We're just going to put that not, out there right now. There's not 40.
Don't switch off yet. So my first one is A Light, A Story of Fire and Nature by Sam Lloyd. And it's illustrated by Samantha Metcalf. It's a picture book. Full disclaimer, it is written by my neighbour. Dr. Sam Lloyd is my neighbour. She is a fire ecologist. And this one, to me, was just such an incredible achievement. It's been some time in the making, and it tells the story of the importance of planned fire management and of fire in nature. And it has these wonderful characters of eucalypt and old eucalypt, Christmas bells, Wallumbanksia. And Sam has managed to distill her knowledge of fire ecology into a really engaging picture book. And she's been doing lots of author visits in Brisbane in the primary school space. And I know she's been getting great feedback. So I love that one. Second one is also about nature. It's The Garden at the End of the World by Cassie Polimeni and illustrated by Bryony Stewart. This one is astonishing.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. It's about the global seed vault in Norway, and a little girl called Isla and her mother go there to discover a garden at the end of the world in Norway. There's the Northern Lights. The illustrations are astonishing. It's just such an interesting concept. And I have been fascinated by the global seed vault since I was a child. So I think this would be one for any nature-loving child. My next is a series. It's the Vision Australia series. So the titles so far in that one are Nikki Hind, Dress for Success, Craig Shanahan, Cooking Up a Storm, and Surfing the Dark. And they are all books which are in Braille, and they are all about people who are vision impaired. They've been a huge hit in my school library. The teachers have loved them. The students have loved them. And I also learned last week that you shouldn't cover
a book with contact or plastic, as we do in a library, which has got Braille on the front cover. I should have thought of this, but we sent them for covering and they were like, oh, we can't cover those because you need to be able to really, really access the Braille. So that's a tip for the librarians. If you're listening, don't cover these ones. But I've really enjoyed that Vision Australia series. I had to include one by Jane Godwin and Anna Walker. And I have chosen, after narrowing it down, I have chosen A Life Song by Jane Godwin and Anna Walker, a very recent publication, just the most beautiful journey through a lifetime and how our life is like a song and we add verses to it. It's just extraordinary. And I was trying to sell it. Well, I didn't have to try and sell it. I was selling it to the year one students the other day and, you know, and their teachers, and everyone was like, oh, that just sounds wonderful. And it is. And then one that's been really enjoyed at school as well is 10 Blocks to the Big Book.
Oh, I remember this one. Oh, yeah. It was great.
It is. It's a Mandarin counting book by Ying Hao Hu. And it's just the most fabulous story about a child and their uncle walking to the Big Wok restaurant, and it's got Mandarin and it's got English, and it's just a fabulous book. It's a counting book, but not like one that you've had before. So it's got all of the wonderful things in it that I love in a book: fabulous illustrations, fabulous text, it's bilingual, there's just a lot happening, and it's a counting book. I mean, I could learn so much from that book, really, couldn't I? Moving on to junior fiction.
The counting or the Mandarin?
The counting.
How much is a washing machine?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, dear. Moving on to junior fiction, I have chosen some series because I love that in junior fiction you can give children that are just starting their independent reading journey a series with 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 in it, and they can just race through them and love them and own them. And this is the Smallest Bee's reading area, and he's read all of these series this year that I'm going to talk about, and he's just really enjoyed them. His favourite has probably been Hello Twig by Andrew McDonald and Ben Wood, a fabulous series about twigs. And then Willa and Wolf by Jacqueline Harvey, illustrated by A. Yee. Little Ash series, written by Jasmine McGonaghy and illustrated by Jade Goodwin. And Miss Penny Dreadful series by
Miss Penny fabulous
Alison
Rushby.
We have
discussed it on the underrated book series list.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Really good one for those kids that want something a little bit different, that's not all sunshine and lollipops. Not that it's, you know, dark. It's just a really good one for, I mean, it's just got that difference to it. And the illustrations in it, just fabulous. I've really enjoyed that series. That's been really popular in about grade 2 in my library and 3. And then Fluff, Bullies Beware by Matt Stanton has just come out, and we've purchased that one for a few nephews and nieces for Christmas. Matt Stanton, what is not to love? He is so very clever, and I feel like he does humour and heart really beautifully. So there's a few Matt Stantons to keep your eye on.
He must also never sleep, I think, because honestly, the man is just phenomenal.
And like me, he has a lot of children. There are many children in his life. So he does a really good job of getting those books out there. And then in the middle grade space, I'm going to start with a poetry one. It's The Sound of the Thing by Maxine Beniba Clark. Has been one that I've really enjoyed this year in the school library. It's a collection of poetry for young people by Maxine that includes haiku and sonnets and narrative verse and rhyming couplets and limericks. I know that school libraries and teachers are always looking for new poetry books, and this is a fantastic one. The Smallest Bee and I also read this one together, and we really enjoyed it. Then we have The Unlikely Heroes Club by Kate Foster. Now, I love, a bit like Zanny Louise, I just feel like Kate Foster, you know, wraps you up in a warm embrace. She talks and writes very sensitively about her subjects. She always has, not always, but she, there's often a dog in her books. Actually, is there always a dog? I feel like
pretty
maybe
much,
there is always
I think
a dog.
She does love a dog.
She does love a dog. I also love a dog and a dog in a book. And she always has these, as well as beautiful fur characters, she always has really fantastic characters that are sensitively portrayed. They are often children with autism or mental health issues. And she just talks really beautifully and warmly about living with autism, and she shares,
you know, so much of herself in her books. And I really enjoyed the Unlikely Heroes Club. It's about 11-year-old Ollie, and he's spending his school holidays at the Heroes Club, where kids can build friendships and learn about emotions, but he just wants to be at home where everything's familiar. Great sort of adventure story as well. And then I've got Sunshine on Vinegar Street, which is also by Karen Comer. I realized as you were talking earlier, Al Tate. This one is a beautiful, again, verse novel about friendship, family, accepting change. And it was very Melbourne. It was very inner city Melbourne. It's about Freya, who has moved into an apartment and her mum is running the cafe downstairs. And it's about being the new girl. It's about basketball. It's fabulous. I really enjoyed that one, as did my, I had to think how old she is, I'm still thinking, 12-year-old. Really enjoyed that one. And Indigo in the Storm is my next. It is by Kate Gordon. Again, we love Kate Gordon.
We do.
This is the third in the companion titles. Aster's Good Right Things was the first in this. I'm not going to say series. I'm going to call them companion titles. And then we had Xavier in the meantime, and now we have Indigo in the Storm. It is all the same characters. They are fabulous characters. And Kate Gordon has a remarkable ability to talk about issues, write about issues which could be considered tricky, and she just does it with such a light but authentic touch. And I love whatever Kate Gordon writes. And then The First Summer of Callie McGee by A.L. Tate.
Which are you again, just putting that in there so I don't feel
yes. No, I'm really not, because I was thinking about, I was trying to think with middle grade about what my 12-year-olds really enjoyed this year. And for her, she went as Callie McGee to the Book Week Parade
did,
this year.
And it was so great.
Yeah, and she really just, she is my little reader in my house who doesn't necessarily want to read something that's going to twist her brain inside out and backwards and forwards. I like to read things which are going to take me, which sort of twists my brain. She loved the fact that Callie McGee was her life, that it was about going on summer holidays. It was so relatable for her. It was about going on holidays with family, friends. It was about friendships. She just so enjoyed it. And it was just this really beautiful, heartfelt, authentic read for her, Al. And I'm not saying that because we're recording the podcast together. For her, it was just like really beautiful. And it was a break between reading stuff for school, which she wasn't really enjoying. And it just wrapped her up in sunshine and goodness. So I want to thank you for that one.
Oh,
really,
thanks.
She
so
read
nice
it at a time when she really needed to read something that was just written for her. And then as we move into YA, I've got Borderland by Graham Ackhurst. Now, this one has only just come out and it is definitely young adult. It's a really powerful and compelling First Nations book. It is his debut novel in this space. It's a coming of age story. It's very much, I found it like it's a real collision of ancient and contemporary culture. Was eco-cautionary, really, really enjoyed it. Set in Brisbane, but it's very engaging, accessible, authentic, and you know, incredibly readable. And I think it's going to end up on a few lists in the coming year. Likewise, Burn by Melanie Saywood is also a First Nations novel. Now, this one is astonishing. I read it in one sitting, which I don't often do, and sometimes I need to take a break. But this one is about the effects of intergenerational trauma, and it asks us to consider why good kids sometimes do bad things. It's about Andrew, who is a young Indigenous teen, and a tragic bushfire near where he lives puts two kids in hospital, and he just knows that the police are going to come after him first because of past behaviours. And it's just, I was talking to my mum about this novel the other day and encouraging her adult book club to do it. They do a teen book each year. I just feel like this one is a must read for many adults as well. And then finally, We Could Be Something by Will Kostakis. This one is, you know, if I talk about your First Summer of Callie McGee being my book for my 12-year-old, this would probably be my book for my 15-year-old this year. This is what she needed to read at the time. It's just beautiful. It's kind of a falling in love, falling apart story. It's heartfelt. It's full of warmth and it's witty. Will Kostakis, I find his writing very witty
It's clever, clever, clever. And it's just this perfect balance between humor and emotional depth. Definitely one for the readers aged above, I would say 15. But yeah, one that will resonate with a number of teen readers. So that's my list. Come on. Well,
look,
I did
it's an
well.
Epic list. Like, it's a great list. I actually forgot. I, seeing as you've done so many, I'm going to add one to my list because there was one I did want to talk about. And then I got sidetracked and I forgot. I wanted to talk about I Am the Mao, the short story collection by Chemyutai Glasheen, which I read earlier this year and interviewed her about. And I thought it was incredible. And it was incredible for a couple of reasons. I do love short stories in this YA space because I think that they are, you know, you can kind of commit to a short story and then you can put it away and then you can come back and you can commit to the next one. But as an overall collection, it just gave such an interesting perspective on sort of like on Africa and on a whole range of different sort of refugee experiences and on sort of human rights and but all in a very engaging way, like not in a sort of not preachy, just like have you thought about this in a from the perspective of a person. It was that that I got from it, and I thought it was really, really good. And I thought it was the kind of thing that would work really well for teen readers who are interested in learning more about the world in human rights and all that sort of stuff, but in a way that's not, you know, bashing them over the head with the horror all
I'm
the
pleased
time.
You included that one because it was one that I meant to purchase for my own teen, and I sort of, you know, these things fall off your radar, which is why it's great to do a roundup of the year, isn't it?
Well, that's right. And you sort of, because you do, like, you go, oh, that was amazing and that was amazing, and then you just completely move on to the next thing. And that's often, you know, it's kind of what publishing's about. It's about the, okay, two weeks of this and then 2 weeks of this and then 2 weeks of this, because there's new books all the time and we're always looking for the new. And then sometimes you forget about the thing that you saw 6 months ago that you thought looked amazing and you've forgotten about, you know. Which is one of the reasons I do love the Your Kids Next Read community faves list, because it's a really interesting mix of, because they're books that were read or discovered in 2023, not necessarily published. So the kind of mix is about half and half. There's probably, you know, half brand new, came out in 2023, and then there's half that are just sort of discovered or new to them in 2023, which gives some of those incredible books that came out last year or the year before another sort of, like, you know, what about this one? What about that one? And it helps people to discover them more. And I do love that aspect of the community. Mm. Recommendations are not necessarily just about the book that came out last week. They are about the one that someone's kid enjoyed 3 years ago that is still relevant to the 10-year-old, you know, today. So I do love that aspect of the community. I think it's fantastic. Anyway, I hope you've all enjoyed our very wild office Christmas party. Because look at us. We are swinging from the chandeliers with our book recommendations. What's going on? Like, we're wrapping up for the year. We do have a summer series coming for you, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But what are you going to be doing sort of, you know, from now until we meet again in the new year, Megan Daly?
Look, I'm avoiding the topic of moving house, and I'm going to say that I'm working on my adult reading list for the Christmas holidays, because I tend to like to read adult novels over the Christmas holidays, although I do have a new Jane Godwin, I think it's an uncorrected proof that I've been sent, so I may possibly slip that one in there. So I will be doing that, and I will also be listening to the beekeeper talk about his baby queen bees that are currently being bred, and he's quite into, so, you know, bit of beekeeping on the side.
You'll be prepping for the release of the Beehive on the 1st of February.
I will be.
Because you can't be doing that in the last minute, can you?
There will be a Sydney book launch. May also be the same weekend of Tay-Tay. Not that I am there for Tay-Tay, because I do not have a ticket. I will be in the car park while my children go to Tay-Tay. But, yes, there will be a Sydney launch and a Brisbane launch.
Fantastic. What about you, Alison Rushby? What's on the agenda for you over the summer break?
I am trying to wrap up things on the work front so I can concentrate on my reading, because I'm pretty sure that my bedside table reading pile is about to kill me. It's about to topple in.
Yes. Take you out.
I know. So I should really start concentrating on that if I want to survive into the new year, I think.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm putting the final touches to our mini series for summer, which is called Behind the Books. and which is a chat with various personnel who are part of the Australian publishing industry and a part of the Australian children's literature scene beyond the people who are actually writing the book. So first up is going to be an interview with Paul MacDonald from the Children's Bookshop in Sydney, talking about the role of the bookseller. It's really interesting, and he has a great list of recommendations of his favourite books, you know, over the sort of last year or so. So that one's definitely worth listening to. That's coming out. That'll be the next episode, first episode of the summer series.
You've done actually such a great job with that series. It's fabulous.
There's actually six of them, like, because I'm an overachiever. And even though there's only 4 weeks, I was thinking there were six. Mm. I've done six. So there are a couple coming out at random times. So if you're interested in the series, maybe subscribe to the podcast wherever it is that you listen to it so that you don't miss any, because Alison's timekeeping is not up to scheduling these things properly. But that's what's coming up. And I'm really very much looking forward to I'm actually working on a couple of different manuscripts at the moment. I don't normally do that. I normally just do the one. But one of them is so research heavy that I need to give myself a break from it. So I've just, because that's what we do, right? We don't just take a break. We start writing something else in the downtime.
Exactly.
So I'm working on a couple of different things there, and I'm really looking forward to like finding some space to do that. So that'll be good. Okay, Megan, where will we find you in the meantime before you reappear?
megandaily.com.au and on Instagram and Facebook at Megan Daily Books.
And what about you, Alison Rushby? Where can people catch up with you on all of the social media places?
Probably the best thing is to go to my website, alisonrushby.com, and you can go straight to Instagram and Facebook and everything from there.
Fantastic. And you'll find me at alisontait.com, alisontait.com. You will find me on Instagram and Facebook at Alison Tait Writer, because I will be sharing bits and pieces of stuff, you know, for the podcast over the next little while. And we will look forward to seeing you in the new year. We hope that you have an incredibly lovely, restful, peaceful, festive season, school holidays, whatever it is that you're about to embark upon. And we'll catch you in 2024.
See you all then.
Bye.